Blog Talk Radio.
We don't need to utter but three words. Tell this nation what we're talking about. They are big words. We don't need to have a great vocabulary to utter. We don't need to have a philosophical bent to grasp. They are three little words. And we want to let the world know that these words describe what we mean and what we are determined to do about racial injustice. Telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool up. Our only answer in conversation turn must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze. We must go on and say, no, what we are saying to this nation is that we want all of our rights. We want them here.
What your life can truly be. Shining star for you.
Oh,
you're trying to make it, they only push you aside. They really don't have nowhere to go. Ask them where they're going.
No stopping us now. And Dr. King said, here, now, and all. We want our rights here. We want them now. We want all of them, not 0.5%, not 2%, not tomorrow, not next week. We want them right now. And ain't no stopping us now. We're going to get with positive people. And those people who ain't got nowhere to go, They just don't know. We're going to keep going. Here we are once again. It is Thursday night's Neo Nations weekly conversations with the man. I call him Minister Jaquan Diaz, and he'll be with us in a minute. You know how it is when you have children and all that. Things happen. But he'll be with us in a minute, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about current events at this point. Things are happening in the community here. We are finding that many things are being explored. Many things are happening in terms of racial indignation, racial discrimination, racial intervention, racial conversations. A young lady was on, 9-year-old young lady, was on a video that went viral from Minnesota school district. And she was reading a letter, and she was saying that the school told her no politics in the school, no racial uprising in the school, no racial education in the school. And she wanted the Black Lives Matter posters taken down because it's political and it's not what she was told. She does not want to be disenfranchised with her friends, who she said are Asians, Blacks, Spanish, Indian, and she said she likes them. They're funny. They make her laugh. And she don't want to have any discourse with her friends. And, you know, there is something called critical race theory. Black history has been turned into something called critical race theory. Black history now is a theory. It's now critical, and it's a race criticism of race. To be critical of something is, and to be a theory is a concept of criticizing a race. And the 1619 Project has been subsequently illegal, that they're trying to say, trying to draw it off. Trump came up with the 1776 project, which continues to tell the lie in American history, and it just eliminates all of African American history, Black history, Negro history, colored history, slavery. And the little girl, I agree with her. If they're not going to teach this whole story in the books, in the curriculum, how do they expect to make a movement, to make posters, and hit the children from the left field? They need to be educated about race. They need to be educated about the history of this country. That young girl needs to be told the truth about what happened so she can be brought up to speed. And she can see things, you know, she can make her own perception, but at least she'll have the full picture so she can draw her own conclusion. The purpose of school is to educate, open up minds, get you to thinking, get you to see things from different perspectives. Not just your personal perspective, your own culture, your own thinking, your own feelings, but to have you have a broader spectrum of understanding of society. The purpose of school is to socialize our children in society, to make them civilized and behavior with one another. A miseducated society about history is always have a demonstrative behavior towards one another. Demonstrative behavior that we have in America, people shooting people because of the color of their skin, because of the color of their language, because they're immigrant, because they're different, and bullying people. And all this because of lack of education, the lack of telling the truth from the beginning. It was disastrous from the beginning, people, when this place called America was formulated, the way they did it, it was disastrous from the beginning. Ain't no way in hell that particular situation, the way they had it set up, was going to be able to continue in that condition. Bringing people here against their will in chains with guns and beating the hell out of them and making them work for you for free, treating them like cattle, telling people they're not human, that they're animals, and dehumanizing them, criticizing them, just totally annihilating them and genocide against them in a society. Just going to work. You come here, you find the Native Americans, and you destroy them with alcoholism, drugs, selling them beads for land, manipulating them, controlling them, put them on reservations, and treating them in a dehumanizing, embarrassed type of situation. How long do people think that kind of behavior is going to flourish a society? How long, when you mix the society up together, how long do you think that kind of behavior is going to stifle a society, move a society forward, make a society stronger or weaker? How long do you expect for this kind of behavior to be accepted in a human society, in a civil society, in a congenial society? How long you expect matriarchal and patriarchal societies that you try to formulate after a period of time, and then when you try to integrate the mere people that you dehumanize, how did that work out? I give you 2021, 20th century United States of America, a disaster waiting to happen, because you cannot treat people any way, in every kind of way, and expect different results. Doing something negative and expecting positive results, it just does not work. Even to the fact you're not trying to redeem yourself, or you're not trying to redeem the situation at all. You're not trying to change the conditioning at all. But how long you expect for this charade to go on? How long you expect for people to continue in that demonstrative, dehumanizing experience? How long you expect for people to accept your abuse? How long you expect to bully people? How long you expect to dehumanize people, drug and alcoholic, addicted, you just drug them up and you cause them alcoholism, you get them drugs and addictions, and you call them animals. How long you think that was going to last? Until it's going to blow up in your damn face. It don't work like that, people. God don't love ugly. God have no preference of man. God ain't never created this kind of environment. This is not what he expected. And that's why it's not going to flourish. It's not going to prosper, nor, you know, the Bible says, until the master sets the slave free, he shall also be enslaved. He shall also not be free. He will never be free. There's no freedom for the master. There's no freedom for the master, as he continued to enslave people. The master would be enslaved. He would think he's in control, but his whole life is enslaved, because in order for him to hold a slave, he had to continue to be in slave mode. He had to be in the position to continue that. He had to put things in place to continue that kind of dehumanizing behavior against another human being. It's not simple to master over somebody, control somebody. Ask any man who try to control his woman in a dehumanizing way, how long that's going to work, what kind of family structure that's going to be, how are your kids are going to grow up and perceive motherhood and fatherhood when they have their own family. It doesn't work. Being mean and nasty to others, it do not work. Trying to control people do not work. Trying to be somebody's overboss, it does not work. Trying to control a person's mind, trying to hold them in captivity, They got enslavement today. They got human trafficking today. They bring people from over Africa, the Caribbean, and Asia and different countries, and they sell them to people in America. They come with the intent of being domestic workers, but all they become is sex slaves. But how long is that going to work? As Jeff Epstein, how long did his multi-billion-dollar sex scheme work with all his hundreds of billions of dollars? It didn't last long. Because God do not like ugly and those kind of dehumanizing situations when you're controlling people above and beyond what they're supposed to be as a human being. Those kind of behaviors do not work. So, and another thing that do not work, if you're not changing the situation, it will not work as well. And that's how that goes. But until we have Brother Minister himself, Brother Jaquan Diaz, come in, we're going to bring in our co-host on Friday nights, tomorrow night, the Black Billionaires Network Club, the man himself, the ingeniousness of thought, from Brother Shalik Reed.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, everybody? First of all, I want to thank you, Dr. Robinson and Dr. Winborn, all of the members of the Neo Nation community. Thank you for your support and thank you for the opportunity. So I was listening and I'm right now, I'm outside, and I'm actually enjoying the air, and I'm basically enjoying the conversation, man, the ideas, and pretty much, yeah, I think what you said was excellent, man. It almost gave me flashbacks, you know, and it's funny how, you know, when I was incarcerated, you know, I come to realize it was levels. And the levels I had come to realize is that I wasn't fortunate like a lot of guys, and I'm not stigmatizing or criticizing, but a lot of people they have outlets, you know, they substance abuse and things of that nature, or they paint and decorate their cell or make it look like it's a room. Or I never did that, you know. I made my bed, I laid in it, and I was always the type of person that. It gets to a point in my life, man, and I guess it's in my DNA because I have indigenous people in my background. So, you know, my ancestors are descendants from Africa.
Holla. I'm Cherokee Indian myself.
Right. So my lineage, I know my history. So my history shows rebelliousness and the level of, you know, if we can't work together and if I can't be free, I choose death. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not a matter of me killing myself. It's a matter of me having power and control over my own life. So it's not a question of me, you know, being affected by the philosophy of man and people in power. I've already know that, you know, I never did that. And it's crazy because, you know, when I was incarcerated for 25 years, you would think that by all means, and I've seen it. I've seen time break people, break them. After 10 years, they might turn Christian or turn Muslim, it's nothing wrong with searching. But some people, I'm saying, circumstances break them. You know, pressure busts price. Even the district attorney knows that. The judge knows that. They know the psychology of the mind where, you know, some people, when the walls start closing in, people get broken. And I was always, it's crazy. I didn't get high the whole 25 years I was incarcerated. You know, I probably drunk hoops, jailhouse liquor twice during 25 years. But I couldn't. You know, I wasn't, and I would say, I used to always tell other brothers, I used to give them props. Because I said, yo, man, I'm not fortunate like you. Like, I can't function like that. It's too many things that's coming my way where my motions are getting denied in the Supreme Court. I'm fighting giants. You know what I'm saying? And I'm rebelling. I'm in riots. I'm in. And a lot of things that were happening to me, it was. it was just based on the fact that I had 25 to life. It was like you a threat just for the time you got because of your potential, whether you see it or not. So we'll lock you, you know, they'll confine me, segregate me for no reason, take away visits, take away packages. So I got to the point where I come to realize that my philosophy in life was that imagination is a very powerful thing. Image is a very powerful thing, which is a derivative of imagination. And basically I come to realize that when I was stripped of everything, I realized that we only are who we think we are. And that's just what it is. You know, we create the reality that we want to see, how we see ourselves. But I come to realize that the most powerful tool and thing that we have is our mind. And when we can control it in terms of, we can't control our thoughts, but we can create, we can control our actions. And real life circumstances dictates real life actions, real life choices. And so, you know, when a person is realizing the reality is set where the most important things are important and everything else is secondary, it puts life in a different perspective, man. But you start to react differently because you know that the power of choice is in your hands, and it's very serious, man, the choices that we make. Because what's happening is that a lot of people want to be controlled. And some people are being controlled by devices and things that they don't even realize. But I just wanted to say that, man, I like the concept.
Thank you so much.
And because when you share that, it's very important that an individual frees themselves from whatever obstacles that they may be facing, such as pain, such as guilt or whatever the thing, and just moving, being able to seek therapy and move forward, and healing. Healing is a very, very, very powerful tool. But that's basically, man, it just made me think, man, because I said, wow. You know what I'm saying? Because in most situations, people see me as being rebellious. But I always look at it like there's certain things that a man, me as an individual, as a human being, you know, I could be stripped of being a man, but I'm looking at myself as a human being that I'm not.
Amen.
I'm just not going to tolerate, and I'm just not going to tolerate.
Amen.
You got to kill me.
There you go.
You got to beat me. You got to. It's not in my DNA to tap dance. I'm in New York City because my grandmother and grandfather was a part of the Great Migration of legal circumstances to try to find a better way from the South.
Yeah.
My ancestors came from descendants from Africa. And then from Africa, we joined the tribe, the Blackfoots and the Cherokees. My whole ancestry involves an aspect of saying, hey, if we can't work together, then you can count me out. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Because
there you go. I want to thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. Of course.
Yes, brother. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. Our special guest is here.
You're welcome.
Ms. Kiki Williams from National Housing Fair, and we're going to talk to her about this creative idea in real estate. And we're going to bring her on as well. Give her a nice hand. Mrs. Tiki Williams from Wezell Properties. She has a National Housing Fair Saturday, June the 26th. All-day event from the comfort of your home. Something for everyone. That's Zooming people, buying, selling, renting, investing. One lucky winner will win up to $2,000 to pay 1 month of their mortgage or rent. Win a 75-inch TV. Win an Amazon gift card. Win. Win Walmart gift card. Wow. Mrs. Tiki Williams is taking the concept of real estate and the concept of learning about real estate to a whole nother level. Let's welcome her here at the Neo Nations Weekly Conversation with Brother Jaquan Diaz, and I'm Ron Robinson, sitting in for Diaz for a couple of minutes until he get here, but let's welcome Mrs. Tiki Williams. Mrs. Tiki Williams, welcome.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me this evening, and thank you so much for that warm welcome. this is a great event because June, if a lot of people may not know, it is National Home Ownership Month. So this month, we are really pushing to try to make sure that people who are renters can also be homeowners. We are ready to fire our landlords. So this event here is being put on by a large group of us realtors. We're one big community. It spans across all 50 states. And it gives a plethora of information in regards to purchasing a home, if you're looking to sell your home, if you're an investor, or even if you're potentially in foreclosure. We have something for everyone, every topic during this event. So it is from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's Saturday, June the 26th. There is a link for you to sign up, but you can watch this entire event from the comfort of your own home. And so once you sign up, you'll get a schedule, and then you can select the modules or the classes that you would like to attend. Like I said, you don't have to be there the entire day, but if you choose to, you're going to get a great amount of information. They even go in depth, even with inspectors, which is very important when you purchase your home to get your home inspected. So we even have something for estate and probate planning. That's very important as well when you go to purchase your home. You want to make sure that your home is secure and also your family. So it's a lot of information.
Wow.
And we are super excited to be able to provide this to everyone, especially since it's virtual. And everybody can attend.
Wow. Well, it's very unique. And we all know people that now, since the pandemic, one of the things that we did learn from the pandemic, I know my church started Zooming, but it was fantastic. Because we have churches in Africa, the Caribbean, and in Europe, and all those people were able to participate. So pastors like, wow, all that love offerings. You know, I'm just kidding. But I'm just kidding, Ms. Tiki. But that's unique what you're doing, because you're taking the Zoom concept and you're educating people nationally, all 50 states, on real estate on the same day. Now, let me ask you a question. In terms of segments, would it be like, you know, the first hour is going to be a certain segment, second hour a certain segment, how in terms of the scheduling and how you set up the presentations?
Yes, so it is broken out, and once you register, you will get a schedule that will list out all the different segments for the day. So you can pop in and out. Like I said, this is being put on by one of our real estate groups, Real Estate Ladies That Rock, and I am one of the sponsoring agents for this event. So it is taking a lot of hands to pull this together and make it happen, and so I'm super excited. So once you register, what will happen is that you'll get another link, and they'll send you a schedule of the entire day. And so if you just want to pop in and say, hey, I just want information on down payment assistance, or you know what, hey, I'm a landlord, I'm looking for landlord assistance, and I'm an investor, I want to know a little bit more about investing and seeing what's out there for us investors. We're also doing on-the-spot pre-approvals. So if you are on that day and you know what, you said, look, I'm going to go ahead and take that leap of faith, because sometimes it takes just a little mustard seed of faith. That's all you need to get to where God wants you to be.
Amen.
And so you're able to do that. We have lenders that will be available to do pre-approvals that day. And even if, just say you're not able to be pre-approved, we still have steps to put a plan in place for you so that you can obtain home ownership. You know, it is very important. That is something I believe that God wants us to have. You know, he wants us to have keys to the kingdom. And so part of that is being able to own a home. So I'm super excited about that. And also, we're giving away some great prizes. Like you mentioned before, you know, $2,000 to one person, a 75-inch TV. We have little gift bags and giveaways all throughout the day. Yeah.
Wow. Now, let me ask you something. In terms of the instructors or the presenters, they're going to be from different states, or they're going to be from the same state?
So, no, they'll be from all over, because that's the lovely thing now about virtual. We can connect with everybody. So we have lenders that are from different states, but we can connect you, because really with the lenders, you know, as long as they're licensed in the state that you are, they don't have to be actually present there, which is a great thing. So even if we don't have a lender in your state, we can connect you with one. Even realtors, we have realtors that are representing. I'm in Texas, I'm right outside of Houston, but we have a group of ladies that span all across the state of Texas. So even if I can't help you, I have another great realtor that can.
Wow, wow, great. And it's going to start at what time in the morning on Saturday, right? Saturday, June 26th?
Yes, Saturday, June 26th is at 10 a.m. To 6 p.m.
Wow, wow. Now, what would be the first initial presentation in terms of real estate? What would be the first subject matter?
It would probably be first-time home buyers. And then from there, because we're kind of finalizing everything. That's why I don't want to tell you exactly, because, you know, sometimes at the last minute, you know, some things can change. So,
right.
So we're going to get that finalized and sent out to everybody on Friday. So you will have your set schedule Friday, what will be going on for Saturday. So you'll know exactly to say, hey, you know what, at 10 o'clock, I want to jump in to this segment here. Or at noon, I want to jump into this segment here.
Wow.
And so
wow,
it'll be
great.
A virtual platform, and it's really nice. I was able to see it. So you'll actually be in like little rooms, and they're virtual rooms. So it's really nice.
Wow. Fantastic. Let me ask you something. Was this a birth child of the pandemic, or was it something you guys were thinking of previously?
You know what? This was birthed from the pandemic. You know, once the pandemic happened, we had to shift. You know, we were normally we were in person doing first-time home buyer events, you know, always in person. But when the pandemic hit, we had to shift as well. And so everything went virtual, and so did we. We went from doing virtual home buying sessions to even showing homes virtually. I've had clients even buy homes virtually. They've never seen them. So everything has shifted since the pandemic.
Wow. Your concentration in terms of you as an individual real estate representative, broker, sales, et cetera, what state do you represent?
I represent the great state of Texas. And so
I specialize in
residential. And I also love working with my investors.
Okay. Let me ask you something. In this event, there's a lot of investors that want to flip, fix and flip. A lot of investors want to buy and retain for rental income. There's a lot of people, you know, that are interested in commercial properties, you know, stores and factories and dealerships and, you know, warehouses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Would there be any presentations for them as well?
Yes. We definitely have a good segment for them, for investors who are looking to fix and flip, buy and hold. So, yes, we have looking to purchase multifamilies. We'll have sellers who are looking for cash offers. So guess what? We can put some investors and sellers together. So, yeah, it'll be a great event. We have something a little bit for everyone who is interested in real estate.
Great. Now, in terms of, I know you spoke about, because one thing that's for the first-time home buyer, one of the most intricate things is understanding the budgeting. You know, it's a whole different story when you rent an apartment than when you buy a home. There's more intricate extra cost that one needs to be educated on. What about, you know, that part in terms of the financing, in terms of what it takes to run a home on a financial level, and things that will cost that you normally don't see in an apartment. When you rent an apartment, you normally don't see certain costs that when you purchase a home and you own it and you're responsible for the street, the landscaping, you know, the water, you know, the heating, you know,
absolutely,
the roof, things of that sort.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we definitely have great segments for the first-time home buyer. We have a HUD-approved counselor that will be available that will be able to talk through that process of down payment assistance, the requirements for first-time home buyers, you know, what is required for the first-time home buyer. Like you said, now you're looking at paying taxes. Well, when you rent, you don't have to worry about property taxes. But when you purchase, now you have to worry about property taxes. You know, putting that into an escrow. Also, the upkeep of your home. You know, certain things are very important that you maintain. Talking about a warranty. You know, it's also great to have a warranty on the home. Even if it's older, you're able to purchase an additional warranty for the home that can help with some of those major costs of potential air conditioner going out, potential issues with the roof. So all the different things that come along with actually owning a home and the upkeep of a home is also very important because that's a major investment. So you want to make sure that you take care of your investment so that you can get a greater return later when you go to sell or even just say if you have equity in your home, you might want to pull that out. Where if you keep the upkeep of your home good, when it's time to refinance, you can also get more appraised for your home. So it's very important. So that's
now,
very
a lot
important.
Of people,
they will definitely be talking about that.
Great, great. A lot of people do not understand the necessity when one is financing a home, the credit rating, the income, and virtually, you know, it's necessary to have monies in the bank to show that you have the down payment towards the home, and that's some of the first things that people need. You know, people always ask about, you know, what kind of credit rating I need, what kind of money I need to have in my bank account. And I know a lot of times, brokers or a sale agent will tell you not to purchase anything while you're going through the process of evaluating to get a pre-approval for a mortgage. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. That is so true. So initially, when you are interested in purchasing a home, the first thing we need to evaluate and look at is your credit. The minimum credit score is 580 to potentially be approved with FHA. FHA does go lower than 580, but it does require a higher down payment. If you're at the 580, it requires a 3.5% down payment. And for those that, for example, may not have that, that is where down payment assistance can come in to help offset that cost. But it's important that you maintain good credit because the better the credit, the better the interest rate and potentially the lower the payment for the home. So making sure that you have good credit, a good stable work history, you want to make sure that if you do with your money, that you have money in the bank, that you're not moving money around. That's another thing too. So just say if grandma wanted to give money to you to help you purchase the house, it's important that we know where that money came from. So it's something called it has to be sourced. So we need to know where grandma got the money, when grandma gave you the money, and so that the lender knows that. So that's very important. Also making sure that during this process that you do not make any major purchases or go applying for any credit. You know how we go in Target, they say, hey, we'll give you 10% off if you apply for this credit card. Absolutely not. We want to make sure at this point, I tell my clients, you're in credit jail at this point. So that means that you don't co-sign for anyone. You don't apply for any new credit. You know, you don't charge up any new credit on the current card. You know, if you do have to make a purchase, because we all know that life happens sometimes, it is very important that you work with your lender. You let your lender know what that purchase is, and they can tell you which card you need to use so that it doesn't mess with your credit rating and your debt-to-income ratio, because that's very, very important. And so, you know, the next step after we get that, we can determine what you're approved for. So looking at your credit rating, looking at the amount that you bring versus what you have to pay out each month will determine how much house you can afford. And from there,
I noticed,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have people that text in there as well with questions, and I know this question might be a little unusual, but try to help us out to understand this as well because it's very important for us to understand the whole industry of real estate and purchasing and selling, et cetera. So Mrs. Barbara Stanson from Maryland, she is a African-American and she heads an African-American association of co-op, I guess like a tenant association.
Okay.
And she's saying that from her, she's 72, from her perspective, when she was young and her parents were trying to buy a home, as African-Americans, there were a lot of challenges. It seemed that her mother and father needed to have more credit than the others. They needed to have more down payment, and they were subject to certain areas to purchase homes. They couldn't just purchase homes where they want to. And there were redlining as well. And even though her father found out, even though he had a prime rate, he was put under subprime because he was African-American. And she just wanted to know, are those things still exist, or is the industry have changed?
So the industry has changed some because we are now part of that industry. Does it still happen? Absolutely, it still happens. But that's why it's very important that we are represented in real estate. And so, unfortunately, you will have some agents that will redline or steer. But for us, ethically, it's against the law. You could lose your license for that. If the board finds out, the licensing board finds out that that is what you're doing as a realtor, because we have a code of ethics that we must follow. But again, we have a lot of African-American and people of color in real estate now that can help circumvent that. And so that doesn't happen. And that's why it's important that you work with a realtor that's educated, that's knowledgeable, and they have a passion and a love for what they do, because this is more than just about getting a check. You know, you really have to have a love for it and wanting to make people's dreams become a reality. You know, being able to, you know, own a home, that is just a gift. That is just, you know, you are creating a legacy for your family, and that's the starting point. Real estate is one of the fastest ways for you to grow wealth within your family. You know, if we look at some of the millionaires and billionaires, if we look at their portfolio, you will see real estate in there. It's one of their main key things.
Wow. Wow.
And
great.
So it's important. But yes, I'm sorry that has happened. That is something
now,
that is true. It has happened. But we definitely can't circumvent that.
Great, great. That's wonderful. We know that there's a lot of things going on in society, and there's a lot of changes being made. As you say, as we're represented in certain industries, we're able to step in and make sure that there's an equal playing field. Another question I wanted to ask you, when I was growing up, one of the major ways, with all the, and I'm 70, so 71 now, give myself a little extra time here, you know.
Okay.
When I grew up in South Carolina, that was one of the ways in which people can find financial independence and as well as accumulate a little nest egg and a little wealth, you know, being you know, buying and buying real estate, renting it out or selling it and things of that sort. Is there still a great opportunity for people who have a entrepreneurial spirit and they might want to go into real estate as a landlord or as a, you know, as a real estate investor? Are there still opportunities out there? And are you going to talk about that subject matter as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is definitely a market for it. I definitely encourage people, if they are interested in investing in real estate, that is, like I said, a great way to grow your portfolio. It is awesome. And so it is something that we definitely will be talking about in our segment, is how we can use real estate you know what I'm saying, to grow our wealth. And so it's very important. So that this market is still open to be able to do that, but it's important that you mentor with someone who's been down this path before. I would
okay.
not suggest that you take it by yourself because you want to be with someone who has experienced this and has, and you do, you have investors that will allow you to work with them. Each investor is different, but there are opportunities for you to work with different investors. There's all kind of classes out there that can help you in regards to investing in real estate. So it's a
Great.
Lot of information out there. You just have to get with what works for you.
Great, great. I am really, you know, technical support in this show. The show is Neo Nation's Weekly Conversation with Mr. I call him Minister because he's such a very, very, very spiritual brother. And this is Mr. Jaquan Diaz. This is his show. I'm going to bring him in, and maybe he has some questions or how he want to lead the show. Let's give him a nice hand for Jaquan Diaz.
Thank you. Thank you for the warm introduction. Sorry for the late come in, but at the right time, I got to make out a little bit of what you were saying, and I'm very ecstatic to meet you. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you so much, and it was a pleasure for you guys having me on today. It's such an honor, and I just want to thank the both of you for allowing me to come to your platform.
Okay, it's appreciated. I know you was elaborating on how real estate is going to really work for us as a people to build wealth.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, can you re-elaborate? Because who I'm going to talk about today, how I like to always do the shows is I come from a spiritual standpoint from a past, so I'm going to talk about a patriarch or a prophet, and I'm going to use that the past story to bring it to relevant times and make it that what happened before for us as a people and a nation relatively is preserved in the stories of the past for the present. So please elaborate on, again, how real estate will help wealth build for us.
Absolutely. I was on earlier is that, you know, God does not want us, he wants to give us the keys to the kingdom, and he wants us to be the lender, not the borrower. And so we can do that. We can continue to help to edify the kingdom by doing that, by buying real estate. And so being able to create a legacy for your family is one of the quickest ways that you can establish that is by buying real estate. Real estate appreciates. It doesn't depreciate. So even now in this market, for example, I have seen people just a year ago purchase a home for $250,000. This same home now is worth $350,000. That is $100,000 of equity in that home. And guess what you can do with that? You could pull that money out and now go and purchase another home. Or you could purchase a multifamily. And now that money will help pay for your current home, the actual home itself, and you can continue to do that and build wealth. So you buy one, then you buy two, then you buy three, and you make sure that the homes that you buy are able to take care of the mortgage and take care of all of the expenses, and then you have residual income coming in. And so you can continue to build. And then at some point you can say, you know what? I might want to go ahead and sell. So this home that I bought at $250,000, I'm going to go ahead and sell it now for $350,000, $375,000. And now you're able, you still have that equity in that home to move to another home and continue to build and continue to grow. And like I said, if we look at any of the millionaires and billionaires' portfolio, you will see that a lot of their portfolio is based off of real estate. They have a lot of transactions with real estate because real estate appreciates rapidly, especially at this time. And it's, like I said, one of the fastest ways for you to build your legacy and your wealth for your family. And it's something that's sustainable. You know, when you go to buy a car, as soon as you drive it off the lot, it depreciates. You may have said it's an $80,000 car. A year from now, it may be worth $60,000. But if you go buy a house instead and you paid $100,000 for it and wait 6 months, it might be worth $150,000. So, you know, just making sure that we are educated and we understand the power of owning real estate and how that there, and even commercial property, that's another thing, being able to buy little small strip malls because you can rent those out. And that is other residual income for you as well. And so it continues, the cycle repeats itself over and over. As long as you're smart and you know how to work this market, it can work for you. And it can definitely help you build your wealth.
Right. Wow. Well, I just want to say that that opportunity of real estate is going to be very good for the people, for our people here in America, because, you know, that's where we come from. Like, we come from agriculture and real estate. Like, mm-hmm. I would love where you coming from for a lot of people who have the right ideas and what to build with the real estate. Because, like, I had ideas for, like, the same way you could buy a family home and you could flip it back and make the money to support your own lifestyle and your household living, plus have another home ready to sell and on and on and on. It's like, what if we replicated that land and used that land to spread the message that we're trying to spread? So here at the Neo Nation, we have something called the Reformation Program, and we're keeping our wealth, our businesses, ideas, like a conglomerate, like a utopia again, if you would say, and keeping that money and those ideas like that together. For instance, if I said that one house will make a three-quarter home, and then after that three-quarter home makes enough money, we'll build another three-quarter home. But you combine the ability for real estate to help people get homes, to help people learn, like learning facilities or et cetera and on, not just to be sold out to the rich or the wealthy that could support buying these houses and flipping them, versus, you know, we had ideas behind the real estate opportunity. And, you know, you'll spread it almost like a Monopoly board, because that's the most important part in Monopoly. And it takes a long time, if not never, for you to realize that playing Monopoly. We played Monopoly. You had all the money. You're happy with all this cash. And then this guy who racked up all the properties, he constantly is telling you, hey, he keeps his hand out. Hey, let me get some of that money. Let me get some of that money. Let me get some of the money. Towards the end of the game, you're like, this was not about money at all. He owns the board. So same thing with NYCHA developments and all the other houses and suburban homes they buy around us to keep them, to keep the ability to control the board. They control the board because half black and Latinos never go to the board meeting and NYCHA developments and none of this. We're not going there. So the people who are actually controlling the board, who buys all the real estate in the areas, you know, the Jews and all the other denominations who own everything, they have a stranglehold on everything. So that same opportunity that you was talking about and bringing that knowledge of us is revelation to us as a people, yes, in the present time, because a lot of us is not doing the proper research. So I wanted to get into two prophets. No, I'm going to just mention as many in correlation. So Moses, peace be to him, was given a blueprint, and there was two levels of revelation that was given to him. One end of the revelation that was given to him was the literal tablets of God that preserved the laws that was etched by God himself. Like, he spoke on those tablets. If you know the story, the first pair of tablets was broken when Moses went down and seen his people worshiping the golden calf. Now, the children of Israel couldn't receive the commandments until they was in a certain state. So most of the people that during the migration out of Egypt that was complaining about what Pharaoh was doing for them was the elderly. If you look at the Lord, it was the elderly. The youth supported Moses in a kind of different fashion because they had like an undying will, because they were born in slavery, and that's something they did not want, versus their parents was born in slavery, conditioned in slavery, and then became adapted to a slave lifestyle. So this is one of the biggest problems at present that you're going to deal with people dependent on public assistance, you know what I mean, welfare, et cetera. When you depend on this, this is the same way that the people was in a state dependent on Pharaoh's system. So when they went into the wilderness, the reason why he had them wandering for 40 years was because when they worshiped the calf, they broke the unity of the people. under the one living creator of existence. So when they did that, that's why he made it that the previous generations or those adapted to those things, they perished before they entered the promised land. So he gave them the tablets again, but now with the stipulation that you're going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. During this time period, they ran across a lot of different kind of beings. They ran across the Amalekites that were descendants of the Nephilim that were giants. If you don't haven't accepted that yet, do your research. Giants existed. These giants that the children of Israel came across at those times, they were highly intelligent. So before they could even get to the promised land to be able to build infrastructure, God put them through all of those perils in order for them to remember that staying unified as a people and building, and if you could help this man get a house, and from that house, y'all could build this from that house and make this, was key to your very survival. That's why he didn't let them enter there yet. Then he told them that in the land that is for you, there's a people that is there. The spies went out to see the land. When the spies came back, the only one that was loyal to him was Joshua, Benjamin, his disciple. And one of the young disciples was helping him with everything that was going on, and he was loyal to him. So the people who were shaken by the stature of the people that was occupying the children of Israel's land came back and reported back to Moses that these people are so big, we like grasshoppers before them. Like, they're going to crush us. Like, there's no way we're going in there. And Moses said, well, God has already told us no matter what they are, we're going to go in there. We got to defeat them because they is barbaric, monstrous people, and we have to liberate the land. Like, these are monsters. The giants went astray because they used their power and stature. And I don't know if y'all know, it's not like a giant and then I shrunk down to Yamin. No, there were still people our normal size, and these giants was around. They were cannibals. They became cannibals. They became destructive. So it was different. They was gone. So they had to be put down. So when this happened, this was the test before they could even build a neighborhood. Before they could build a neighborhood, they went all of this. They can't even build a neighborhood because they was 400 years in bondage under the Pharaoh's rule. They didn't have neighborhoods. You had places where they slept. If that, they were sleeping in the garbage or died building the Pharaoh's infrastructure, just like the Americas. When we built the Washington Monument, when we built the Pentagon, when we built that subway system, when we built all of this, they still make money when we built all of that. All them houses, that land, we cut down them trees, we did all of that. The same way everybody here got a market to make money, we did it all. Same way. It happened again. The same structure. So now Moses, with his undying will, had to launch an assault with Joseph and Aaron and Benjamin and all of them, and they went in there to put down this enemy, and with God's help, they won. But Moses himself, this was still not the land. They occupied the land before the promised land, and Moses himself got to see it, and he died before entering the promised land because God's word is so true that when he said the previous generation was perished, since he was tied to it, he died too. So God is not impartial. The Creator is not impartial to nobody's stature. This is a man who spoke to God directly, and God liberated his soul right there. You leaving. My promise is true. There's no favoritism in this. Every man going to die. Every man from that previous generation going to die before the next generation could build what they built. And if you read Judges on, then you're going to know that this is when the infrastructure started being built. So this is to go to all the prophets, the story around Moses being the basis and Abraham being the basis. Abraham being the father of faith, who provided the spiritual aspect of the faith, and then Moses given the structure. Jesus, peace be to him, came back to give the grace to the law. And this, and the reason why he kept repeating Isaiah is because Isaiah was that too. Isaiah constantly reminded his people of who the Creator was. Think that's why Jesus will say things, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, for you, because for you approach me with your mouths, but your hearts are far from me. Speak in the doctrine of man, because the Sadducees and Pharisees already twisted religion and faith to their will to control the economy. They were bleeding the people dry. They was using the church and everything else, the synagogues, the temples, to rape the economy dry and to take the minds of the people and tell them, this is which way you have to go. This never stopped. These powers to be have always existed in the shadows. And the devils, they use man as tools until man becomes more evil than them, until they could persuade them so far that man is only driven by his own greed. So Isaiah being blessed with the ability to see into the future and constantly reminded people of the oneness of the Creator, he was around a time where Ezra should be, maybe they around the same time. Ezra and Isaiah is happening around the same time period. And I don't know if you know, Isaiah is the prophet that rebuild the Torah because it was destroyed during the slavery and during the wars that the children of Israel constantly went through. So he was blessed with the ability to bring back the Torah to the children of Israel, and they rebuilt, they built Solomon's Temple. If you guys don't know where it's located now, that's the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. They call it Masjid Aqsa now. And the reason why it's a mosque is because the Romans actually built Jupiter's temple over Solomon's temple, and Salahuddin was the one who defeated them. He built back the Solomon's temple as the Dome of the Rock, and then he allowed the Jews and the Christians to practice freedom of religion, because in Islam, originally, it was never told that it was supposed to be forbidden against anybody to practice their freedom of religion, as long as it was part of the people of the book. And the people of the book, it doesn't mean Bible. It means the Kitab. The Kitab would be the sole position of the gospel, the Torah, the Psalms, the scriptures of Abraham and down, and all the prophets in their pure entity. But the devil, since he promised to lay in wait for us on his straight path, He manipulates all the other vices that man runs into, but his supreme seat of control is religion and influence and belief and desires and oppression, where he builds us down into condition us into what we needed. So a lot of people will pay attention to crisis, to the crisis power, the Messiah's power to raise the dead, to kill the blind's eye, to heal the leprosy. But if you don't know, in the Bible, Elijah actually completed all of these same miracles. Elijah rose the dead. Elijah healed the blind's eye. Elijah healed the leprosy. Same miracles. And why was that? Because the main factor of Christ was not the ability to thwart or raise the dead, because that was a challenge against the modern times. That's what God does with every prophet. Moses challenged sorcery because they was masters of magic and sorcery, the pharaohs. So he challenged and defeated that. Then Jesus, he challenged and defeated science because the Jews was masters of science of that time. Medicine and arts was their strongest standpoint, and they used that to separate themselves from the remainder of humanity. Jesus challenged that with the healing of diseases and ailments that were impossible except by the finger of God, which is the Holy Spirit. Except through the power of God, you could not do this. And when they witnessed this, they still disowned their Messiah directly in their face, and it says it's like they noticed him like the back of their hands, like their own children. They knew it was the Messiah, but they were so gone and so evil at that time with the with the power control that they felt they had, they was not going to let it go. So I say all of that to say that his biggest ability to heal the hearts, to influence people in a way where Christ, you could be, it was people who had, in their little world was everything. They had a fish. Matthew had a whole, he was fishing. He was fishing at that time to hold down a place of water to fish and have fish to sell fish, boats. You was good. They were good. I have some money. I'm all right. And he said, I will make you a fisher of men. Follow me. This man dropped everything. But what about burying my father? That's what they're saying. What about, I got to bury my father. Let the dead bury the dead. These people are dropping everything. Everything. Forget going back home and saying bye to anybody. I'm dropping everything. Which way you going? I'm following. If you get in that boat, I'm getting on it. If you keep going, I'm going. If you fall up a cliff, I'm jumping. That's undying will and determination that is lost in this millennial time. You understand that the media and the TV and the lust for just wealth without no purpose behind it, mankind is lost. They really don't know where they came from. They don't idolize the prophets in their proper stature. Like, you got, like, shows, you don't see the devil's plan. Like, you got shows like The Simpsons. You got shows like South Park, got Jesus on it acting like a clown. God forbid for me even repeating those words. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a mockery. You could do that now. You could mock positions, and nobody is hurt about it. Nobody is offended by it. It's something that is just people get away with now. So my stance on the real estate is I hope it's led in a way to give green back to the planet, because when you come from the planet, you know that the earth is alive. So the earth being alive is great that we could get into the real estate, but if we don't build back abilities to clean the air, to transfer all of these cars from gas to electric and build ways to give back to the planet, you want to just keep building on its back, concrete, and keep building on it and building on it. If grass could crack the concrete, look at the grass breaking the concrete up. What is happening in the earth that could happen? That a plant could break mankind's structure. You can't break that, but through time, that little plant will break that. So what else wants to come up? What else wants to shift on the planet? Tornadoes and earthquakes and all and everything else. The planet is in trouble. So if we don't pay attention to that, even in all of our ventures, what are we doing? We have to build our wealth together, and everything we do from wealth and everything has to be like a preemptive strike. Like, it has to be looked at like that, because it's the truth. Because if we don't separate our education, the ability that you just said, real estate, somebody else will still control that power, and we still got strings in our back. We still not going to have what we truly need without an aim. So I want to say that I thank you that what you said was influential, and it coincided with the story that I wanted to say today and the essence of it, that unity and, you know, wealth building and community development and building real estate. Real estate was a prime ability at that time to be able to secure land so communities could be built, so schools could be established, to know about the creator, et cetera. So you would put it on our level that we need the real estate ability to build communities. If we don't build communities, then we're not going to be able to show the world or ourselves that we can build a community that is owned by us and ran by us, and it will run how it's supposed to run, civilized. So thank you.
Absolutely. And let me piggyback off that. It is very important. Some of me and my other friends and realtors, we say it's important for us to buy the block. And just what you said, if we want to make a change, we need to buy the block. And we need to be able to make that change. And it's actually happening here, because as you see a lot of times in real estate, regentrification will come. You know, our communities will go down to nothing, and then other people will come in, get it for pennies on the dollars, regentrify it, And those that did stay then are pushed out. And we don't want to do that either. You know, we want to be able to go back in and make a difference, keep our people in their homes, but still be able to make that area what it used to be. So, and to do that, it's important that we are all aligned. God's alignment is very important, and that we take control of that. So I totally agree with you. It's all in God's alignment.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You got any feedback? Anybody want to take any questions?
Yeah, we're gonna have some questions. I would like to, Ms. Tiki Williams, because I know your event is this Saturday. I would like to also invite you tomorrow night, if possible, same time, 7 to 9. We have the Black Business Billionaires Network Club, in which I host, and Brother Jay Kwan comes on as well as Brother Shalik. We'd love to have you on as well to continue to offer more people the opportunity to participate in the webinar on Saturday as well. But I just wanted to see, you know, invite you tomorrow as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I would love to attend.
Yeah. Great. So I'm going to open up some mics, and people, if you have any questions in terms of real estate, the event on Saturday, and Mrs. Tiki Williams will address that issue. I'm going to open up 914-979. Your mic is open.
Yes, sir, my brother. Well, thank you for having me come on the call. And yes, I, you know, really do appreciate what both of you have said, you know, because, you know, when you really look at real estate, you know, they said from the history of this country, you know, that people that became millionaires in this country came millionaires through the structure of real estate, through the industry of real estate. And that was really something that, you know, is not just something that happened way back then, but it's still a door that's open for us at this time as well. So we can utilize the ability of dealing with the real estate industry and be able to really financially upgrade our community. And that's something that really needs to be done. And once we start to really get into the different aspects of real estate and starting to utilize that, we're going to see a lot of good results coming through to help our people. And the thing about it as well is, you know, the mindset, you know, of us coming together is not just about, oh, good, I'm going to become a millionaire. Now. I'm going to get me about 2 or 3 mansions, and I'm going to, you know, live here and there and, you know, do this. Yeah, but the other side of it is, what about helping your people? You know, these are things that need to be done as well. So we need to not only just look at just becoming wealthy, but also becoming folks that do care about the lives of our people. That's the old saying, Black Lives Matter. And it is true. Our lives do matter, and that we are worthy of us working together to actually help to create communities that could really be empowered to overcome a lot of the negative things that we see in our community. You know, the gang wars with our kids killing each other, you know, a lot of our people getting stuck and hooked on drugs and alcohol, all these different things that, you know, we deal with. But the bottom line is we can pull out of all of that and really start to focus on some positive things that can really help our people. And real estate can definitely be one part of it that can really have a huge impact on, you know, being a blessing to our people. And one other thing that, you know, I think, you know, we really need to, you know, see as well is not only just making the money, but using the money to help our people. And also the other side of it is being able to see the different sides of real estate as well. Because as mentioned earlier, you know, the beautiful thing about real estate is that, yes, selling green residential deals, whether it's wholesaling, whether it's flipping properties, and, you know, a number of different things that can be done. The other side of it is also commercial, in commercial buildings, you know. And, you know, because that's in a higher level of, you know, financing, a lot of times, you know, they don't even consider that to be something to deal with, because the reason why is because, you know, it's more money. But at the same time, it's more money that can be made as well by flipping a building for $500,000 or $1 million is something that, you know, white folks do quite often, you know, around the country. And it's no big deal.
Sure.
But the bottom line is you can do it as well, you know. And that's something that we don't do on a regular, but that's something that we should start to see as something that can really, you know, motivate and uplift our financial situation. Because you could sell, like, with about 10 houses on it that will equal the same amount of money that you just did on one flip for a commercial building. So when you're looking at both of those situations, you can combine the two. I'm not saying don't do residential flips. I'm saying you could do both. But the bottom line is we need to also introduce our people to the ability to flip commercial buildings as well, because in doing so, we can make hundreds of thousands of dollars and even become millionaires in a shorter period of time. So this is something that could really be great for us. But again, we just need to know that it can happen, the proper steps to take to actually deal with that. And once we deal with it from that perspective, we're going to be able to see that this is something that can really help our people become, you know, financially stable and in a lot better situation than they were before in the past.
That's very true. That's very true. I want to say that, like, us gaining the ability to buy and flip houses in real estate, the thing is, like, I went on a venture before to try to look into building a community and how it was done. And somebody told me, his name was Imam Masih Muhammad. He's actually Dr. Imam Masih Muhammad now. But they was trying to amount enough money to build a community, and the universal correlation was one group of people. And if you don't know the group of people by now, I'm sorry to say it, is the Jews. Like, they just owned everything. Like, and to be honest, the reason why I would like it for us to get into a gap ourselves where we control the market, making sure those houses is sold to someone within our network. Like, the Reformation program makes it that our wealth is circumambulating in the same community. If somebody from that Reformation program got a good deal on a house and it's money, we lost nothing. We gained. But anything outside of that, somebody else making the any kind of dollar on that wasn't ours and it leaving our hands, that's a loss. Yeah, you became a millionaire, but it's still a setback for us as a people. We did not do what I said spiritually was the essence of what Isaiah and Moses spoke about. That he made them go through all of that before they could build a block. Think about why them staying together and holding to the law of God, them serving and making their money, because that's what the second part of what Moses came with. He came with the tablets, which was the law, and then he came with the standard or the criterion. The criterion was their standard way of living, and it gave them the way to, where to put their, how to move their money, and they did not move their money with nobody else outside their community. So I'm just afraid of the real estate market, and yeah, you're selling it, and you're selling it, and you're selling to people, and when we selling, we're not really winning. Like, yeah, we gain some American dollar, but that we don't know that have that house no more. Like, or if we did rent it out, yeah, we're making the money off that family, but it didn't go towards somebody in our network, so when they paint their rent, the Reformation program got used up, and that helped it that we was able to buy more food and other programs that we want to create for everybody else that is within our network. So this is what I really want to see is things like that happen.
And I want to say also, you know, all things work towards good for those who love God and call by his purpose. So long as you call by God and you're doing good and you call by his purpose, all things works towards that good. God makes it work towards that good. So, like, Mrs. Tiki Williams, I'm calling you Minister Jaquan Diaz, and Brother Benjamin Bridges, and Brother Ronald A. Robinson, and Brother Alan DeGrotis. When we come together, it's God's purpose. We might think it's to come together to do real estate, to do this, to do that, but God's similar people together for a purpose. So I see that all the goodness that we coming together is a start. Because a lot of times God had already planned things before we men think sometimes that they orchestrating stuff, they putting stuff together, they thinking about it. God knew it way before. God knew what was going to happen to us when we was a embryo, not even a fetus in our mother's womb.
What
God already knew every hair on your hair is counted. So I believe that God knows about these things, and for his timing is different than ours. But I feel that as long as we, like Brother Daquan Diaz said, as long as we, you know, keep God in mind and have our heart in the right place, things work for good.
There you go. That's true.
Amen. Yes. Amen.
There's some more listeners on as well. I'm going to open up some more mics. We're on with Miss Tiki Williams. There's a tremendous real estate fair going on Saturday. I'm going to get my thing here again so the listeners will know what's going on so they can understand what we're doing here now and participate as well.
Brother Ron, we're
talking about.
Right,
say what now, brother?
Yeah, well, basically, in listening to both of them, you know, I really do, you know, just thanks that you guys are moving forward to do some of these great things with the real estate. And what I wanted to say is that I look forward to us, again, coming together to work together. Because if we could do that, we're going to be able to really be able to help a lot more people, you know, when we come together. Whether it's in Texas, whether it's in New York, and I'm not sure where the brother is, but the bottom line is all these different locations, we're going to be bringing people to the table that are going to be able to benefit from some of the things that we're going to be talking about, whether it's, you know, doing a residential real estate, whether it's doing a commercial, or whether people are going to be open to do both. That's, you know, really what I'm hoping, because like I said, we can make money on both the residential, a little less, but at the same time, the bottom line is, when we do residential and commercial, people are going to be able to benefit even more so in a larger and better way. So anyway,
yes,
as we go down the line, that would be good if we could, you know, connect with one another and start to, you know, work with each other to bring these bills about. Because like I said, you know, these are things that, you know, shouldn't be just with this little group over here and that group over there. And it's, you know, keeping everything private and got a brick wall up so they don't let everybody come into it. But if we could come together and deal with that and work together as a group, that would really be good, you know. So we could definitely help a lot of people by doing that.
Absolutely, I agree.
I wanted to get to that topic about that. And it's something that's been – it's something that the brother, my father, Reverend, said before about when the – was it the Asians or the – well, anybody – Chinese, Asian, et cetera, the Asiatic community and what they was dealing with as far as hate crimes, et cetera, it's like they didn't look at our plight as their own plight until something happened to them. And they got a taste in the Americas of hatred. Actually, they went through hatred at another point, and they were actually, like, reimbursed for that. I did my research about when a lot of their children was held in concentration camps in America. Like, they was held in camps for years, and their parents would die off, and they would be in the camp for years. So they granted them immunity and gave them, you know, American citizenship and had money for their community. This is China. You see Chinatown. You see, you know how far their real estate stretches if you ride the bus from Chinatown all the way to Florida and on, you see everything that they're owning and buying up and owning things in our neighborhoods and selling us Chinese food and the things we like to eat, but never put a dollar back in the community. Yet once they was in a plight, they needed our aid. I watched them go to marches and support a lot of black politicians right now to align themselves with the Black Lives Matter movement and kind of like shelter themselves. I don't blame them for what they did, but at the same token, what we need, like if we was to join in the the fact that, you know, there's a wall being put up and immigrants that should have rights that America should come in. And we joined in on that plight. Does that move us forward as a people or set us back? Because there's no black, white, Asian history. It's human history. It's the history of humanity collectively. Now, if we come to any other people's aid, it has to be on the first standard that unequivocally we are the prime essence of the beginning of the world, Africa. Before it was called Africa, forget it, because Charles Africante called it Africa. When it was Kemet or Asham, and when it was what it was, the Holy Land of what it was, that is where every other race of people came from. And they're Chinese, and their karate and all their martial arts is seen on hieroglyphics in pyramids. You learned that from us. It's amazing that there's African tribes still today that when you look at them, they look Asian. They got the squinty eyes, the same face, just black. So if you're not going to – and we have monuments and statues that they hide in their country and all of that. That was ours. Their plates and a lot of things that they were getting, their fine dinerware was from us. So you are part of the same monster that went through the hand of history to obscure that fact. And while we was going through any other plight, instead of saying, hey, you know, you're my distant brother, you sold me a chicken wing, and you sold me Chinese food, you clogged my arteries. That's what you did for me. And then when you was in a plight, we came to your aid. Now, if they don't respect that factor, you're not going to tell me nothing because I see them in my neighborhood every day. I say hi to them when I can. But would they come to my aid when I need aid? Now, if they don't, they have real estate, they have wealth. Could they bring what they got on our table to help us come out of our hole? Of course they could. Would that happen? I don't know. So other denominations and people, I'm trying to bring everybody on human first. We are a human race as a collective whole. As a human race, we are immature. As a race, like a whole human planet, like that person's skin color is different from you, but he breathes like you, he drink water like you, he could think like you, but we still have stigmas put in place. The reason why us as the meek right now needs to have self-identity is because we were robbed of it. You can't tell somebody to be proud if they don't know who they are. You can't tell somebody to be proud if they was beaten down so much in their head and they're not educated on where they came from so they don't know where they're going. So we are back a long time. Like our whole school system, our whole structure has to be torn down and rebuilt. So it's like, okay, I'm for helping any other people if they understood that first. Because like even with a Mexican, like I built with a Mexican that was very educated and he was into the Maya and he was into why the pyramids was in Mexico versus I've spoken with a Mexican and he's like they just there, I don't know. And he was actually, I ran into a racist Mexican. And then I ran into one maybe in prison who was educated. He knew about the Maya. He knew where they got the idea from the Sumerians. Who were the Sumerians? They were dark-skinned people. Who were the Maya? They were dark-skinned. How was their pyramids in New Mexico, in Mexico, and in the Americas, in South America? Oh, okay, let's look into that. He knew about it, and he taught me it. So, see, a leader or a teacher like that for his people, yeah, he could get me to rally for why they building this wall, and let's build schools and infrastructure to re-educate them on where they came from and where we came from so we can know that we can hold hands in this war for our identity back. But outside of that, nah, I'm standing down. That's just my standpoint.
Thank you, brother. And you know, that's all about building community and building self and building faith and being gracious like God and being humble. You know, like the brother said on that song, I love brother Kirk Franklin. He said in his song, if my people will humble themselves and turn away from their wicked ways, then I can hear from heaven and the land shall be healed. So it starts with us. You know what I'm saying? Start with me. It start with Mrs. Williams. It start with brother Grotis. It start with brother Ben. You know, we have to be that, you know, we have to be that love we're looking for. And a lot of times it starts with that. So thank you so much. I'm calling you Minister Jaquan Diaz. You're a prophet, actually. And, you know, thank you for the wisdom at such a young age, you know. It's fantastic.
I appreciate that.
I just want to say.
I'm humble.
Thank you, brother. I just want to say back to the audience, Mrs. Tiki Williams is with us. She has the National Housing Fair Saturday, June 26th. They're going to have a webinar, a Zoom, buying, selling, renting, investing in real estate. There are going to be a lot of prizes given out, $2,000, 75-inch TV, Amazon gifts, Walmart gifts. And I would suggest everybody get there from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And Mrs. Williams, that's Eastern Standard Time?
Yes, it will be. Yep, Eastern Standard
Time. Okay, great. Great. So, Brother Jaquan, if it's possible, I'd like to open up some more mics and let some people might want to ask some questions to Mrs. Williams about the fair Saturday.
Yes, of course.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to open up 718-350. Your mic is open.
Give thanks, brothers and sisters. How are you this evening? My name is Ronald A. Robinson, and I was the first because the A makes me first.
He's first because he's old, y'all.
Where is this seminar going
to
be?
So this is an actual virtual seminar.
Okay.
Yes, sir. So you can sit in the comfort of your home and be a
mm-hmm.
part of this seminar. There is
mm-hmm.
a link for you to register so that once you register, you'll be able to gain access to the virtual event.
Okay.
And so I think they might be posting that on their website. I can give that to you now, whatever
okay.
you prefer.
All
if
right.
you like, I can give that to you. Okay.
Yes, please.
So if you would like to go to nationwidehousingfair.com and then / my name, Tiki, which is T-I-K-I, and last name is Williams, and it's all one word together.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, yeah, please feel
Thank
free
you.
To go ahead and register. And like I said, I think you'll
okay.
gain a lot of great information from it. And if you have any questions, you know, you can always text me, call me, or email me. I'll be available
mm-hmm.
to assist.
All right. Thank you, sister. Brother Daquan.
You're so welcome.
Yes. Pastor Daquan, or Teacher Daquan, as you were speaking with regards to the Asian or Chinese community, the only thing that they didn't lose coming here was their connectivity and their history. All right. When the Chinese first came here, they went back because they said that there's nothing here. And as the British brought in their opium and all this other kind of stuff, opium wars and stuff, because a lot of them moved from there to here to California, you know, in the 1800s, you know, and so on.
People just like your background noise.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, I don't know if it's you, brother, but I'm just saying. We want to hear what you were saying.
Okay, and when they came here, they worked and worked for people, mainly a lot of times worked for themselves. And then when the railroad started coming through, they built a railroad from west to east and east to west, and they needed that labor. So they took these coolies, for lack of a better name, to build these railroads. And on the line of the railroads, they opened up businesses for themselves and everything else to handle that business of building railroads for everybody. They made a lot of money. But the thing was that they were as treated as much as we were a lot of lynchings and hangings during that time, you know, if you didn't bow down or lower your head and stuff like that. And that transitioned to who they've been in this country. You know, to keep your head down, pay attention, don't make no noise, you know, and so on. While on the other hand, we weren't going to do that. We had bowed our head, made no noise, you know, got hung and what have you anyway. So we start revolting against that. And not only revolting, but we wanted to be so much part of this country because we lost sight of who we were and where we were. We joined the military. We did a whole bunch of other things that were there. So I'm looking up now, there is a historian on Chinese and African history. And was looking for his name. I haven't got it yet. But he
I want
and
that book.
Other, huh?
Yeah, I said, I want that book.
Okay, I'll find it for you. I'll get it to you.
Thank you.
So, and he's been studying this for 20, 30 years. It is very well known for those people who are interested or curious that a lot of their statues and things like that look like us. You know, you got Chinese as dark as I am, you know, and as light almost as white people. You know, so
yeah, they found a Chinese army of statues in a temple. It was like a long,
yeah,
like a mile long of statues. Of,
yeah. Yeah.
And they black.
Yeah.
They live. You see
yeah
them, they
yeah
look so black. They the most ancient statues in China.
Yeah. That's right. I have to, I in all of that, I have to say that, of course, they're black. So the first,
right,
quote,
of course,
Europeans are black. Because that's who human beings were. We were dark-skinned people. But we had many divisions of dark skin, which you can see that permeate all throughout the world, from albino to yellow to red to brown to cinnamon to purple to blue, and so on. So that just denotes where all these people are different looking people come from. And as you said, with regards to the Chinese, you go to Nigeria, I think the Congo or Benin, these people look like they're Chinese, but black.
Right.
The Yoruba, you know, the Igbo, they saw, you know, with the slanted eyes, you know.
Wow.
You know, and so on. And then the Igbo, look high yellow, and there's no white in them. That's just how God did it, you know, and so on. So when the difference came about because of the Europeans separating the human being into two parts, black and white.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And so that took on.
That created an identity. Yeah.
You know, talk to a Guyanese, you know, some Guyanese, he says, no, I'm British. You can't tell him he ain't white or British. And some Haitians too, you know.
French. Or you got like what? Like you got so many people who speak French from the island and he identifying with being French before believing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well they identify being French because of the colonialism. And neocolonialism,
right.
They speak the language, you know, Canadians, black Canadians, you know, some of them say, I'm not white, I'm French. I had a friend like that. We didn't get along too well. But you know, I see all the languages. I was surprised of all the languages that black people spoke all over the world. And that shouldn't be a surprise because we're all over the world.
Amen.
You know, I know brothers that speak six or seven languages and read and write four. You know, brothers and sisters, you know. So the only difference between power is that King George decided to separate us as black and white, and they gave the white man the power supposedly over us, you know. They say don't let a black cat cross your path. Don't let a white man cross your path. I walk on the other side of the street, So when we're talking about this, we have to think of the scope of human being. When the Europeans came here, the Indians, pale face, the Chinese, lychee man, you know, because their skin was like leeches. That's what they looked like, you know.
Wow.
And so Africa was something else, you know, or down south or in Europe. Rome would call French people or British people pink. The pink people, you know, and so on. So this thing of separation of because of power or control has been around for a very long time. And we need to get out of this stuff, you know, ourselves. Light skin, brown skin, good hair, bad hair. You know, we're the ones that brought the hair into the universe. And we're all of that. Short hair, nappy hair, long hair, dark hair, blonde hair, blonde hair.
Mm.
The first people who went with blonde hair were black people.
Mm.
You know?
We don't identify enough with our beauty, like, and our skills and where we came from. And it's why, like, I always love when you listen in and understand what I be breaking down, and you always put some insight and wisdom on it. I want to always say I appreciate that, because it's like it has to be a mass re-education. And there was an imam before he passed, and I was really close to him. You know, I don't know if anybody know, I study university, so I met pastors, rabbis, imams. This is what I search for. I meet people who state they in this standpoint. But Imam Salihu, rest his soul, he was a very wise person. He studied a lot of the Bible and universality with just like me. That's why I wanted to be next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And before he died, he said the main thing was that man must learn how to learn. And then, like, I paused, and then he was like, I'm going to say it again. Man must learn how to learn. So I'm like, mm-hmm. What did it mean? And it took a while before I understood what it meant through my own trials. And I'm still getting it, because I'm not always the best listener or receptive to information when it comes to me. And what he meant was that if a re-education doesn't begin and man doesn't get re-educated on who they came from, then you're going to let them win. Because the Crusades, like, somebody is saying, listen, I don't have to learn nothing about the Bible, the Quran, God, anything before me. I just got to learn.
That's world history.
Right. And then Crusades was launched to hide in most of our history. And you don't think that was important, but it was important to them to be able to hide our history, to basically rewrite history and sell it back to you as the truth. You don't think that was, if they was thinking like that, then why did they think like that? Because they knew when you defeated the people and you took away their culture and who they were, then they defeated. Like, now you broken their minds. They knew the science of it. And if you haven't read Willie Lynch's letter yet, then you don't know what I'm talking about, Willie. Or if you haven't read Jim Crow Law and understand that by Sister Michelle Anderson, then, you need to go read that, because you're going to understand that it's a mechanism that had to be built by a monster. The more I understand the criminal justice system and the way that fuels this country to stay alive, I don't understand what that is, if not the devil himself, if not a being incarnated for him. Like, it was really built, this whole American system was really built studying every other system that was before it. They didn't just build this superpower by accident without pilgriming a whole bunch of information and power and resources to build this. There's a lot of bones that sit under this American soil, far as it being what it is today. But in essence, since there are people like us coming together with good, that's why the earth is still standing. It's still a glimmer of light here. And it's going to be very important for us to educate the new millennials. We need that energy. Those kids in them colleges and these young people coming up, we need that energy. That's why I keep repeating Moses' story, because when you see stuff like George Floyd and everything happening, you see the colleges marching out. But there's not a leader in front of those youths saying, listen, do this, and this is why. There's a lot of organizations that come out and go. They like to see that momentum build. They grab the momentum, and then the momentum dies. But right then and there, that was the stance. But like I always repeat, things like when George Floyd happens and his mass marching, that for me, and when I was in prison and I seen that, I knew that was the interpretation of the scripture that meant they're going to shake in their graves. And the coming of the grave is when we really stand up just like that, and they couldn't do nothing. No, you couldn't be outside because of COVID. You can't be outside because people are still outside. Oh, well, we outside. Look, we still outside. You see that manpower? That scared them. That scared them in the sense if there was really a real plan behind that energy, it was D-Day, and they knew that was the shaking of the grave, and they knew to put other things outside of our knowledge in place to try to stop that love and energy they seen that came out for George Floyd. But if we come out like that for every human being, that's the coming of the grave. And that's when we come out the grave, then blessed be the meek, because the meek will inherit the earth.
Amen. If it's possible, brothers, I want to see if I can, what y'all getting, we definitely got to do a segment on this knowledge. This is too much for a couple of minutes, but what we got left, time we got left, but I just want to know, open up some more mics and No, he's not here yet. But I just want to open up some mics for some of the listeners that want to say something to Mrs. Yes. Tiki Williams in reference to the seminar, yes. The webinar this Saturday.
No,
so I'm open up.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm open up 347-2277, 347-277. You're on with, Jaquan Diaz Show, the Neo Nation Conversation with Jaquan Diaz, and Mrs. Tiki Williams, who has a webinar on a national webinar, National Affair for Real Estate. 347-277, your mic is open. Hello? Can you hear? Okay. We're going to open up 347-277. Your mic is open. Are you there? Unmute yourself. Okay. So we'll open up the brother himself, who invited Mrs. Tiki Williams, Brother Alan DeGrotis, 631-358. Your mic is open. Did I do something wrong? Or nobody hear me? Okay, I'm open up once again, Brother Binyami.
Thank you for showing up. Thank you. I got to say thank you for showing up. I apologize. I was on mute.
Okay.
And I was on hold by mistake. This is great.
Well, go. Okay.
I just
wanted
the address again, because it wasn't when I typed it in, it didn't come up with any specific site.
Mrs. Tiki Williams, Mr. Gregory Hall, he wants the address to the webinar.
Yes, it is www.nationwidehousingfair.com and then / my name, Tiki, T-I-K-I, and last name Williams.
All right. I guess the only difference is, okay, I think I know what might be the difference, because when you had mentioned it the first time, unless I didn't hear it properly, I didn't hear the .com and I didn't enter that. So I'm going to try again, just to make sure, because it's something that I definitely would like to check out. And as I said, when I entered in, I had left out the .com, and there was a series of sites that came up.
Okay.
Can I give some closing thoughts out for the remaining of the show for the sister?
Yes, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a closing thought from our host. I'm going to say Minister Jaquan Diaz.
I appreciate it. I'm trying to get used to that title. Okay. I wanted to say, sister, that, you know, the women of intelligence is highly important. And I'm going to talk with the brother Ron to re-educate myself a little better on this book. But there's a lot of things from, like, down to Beethoven's art and Beethoven music and art of Da Vinci that actually was done by women. And a lot of stuff in history has been done to obscure the intelligence behind women and the significance behind a woman in building
Absolutely.
A nation or a community. And
she
that was very important in destroying us as a people. So outside of this real estate venture and your ability to accumulate wealth and the fact that you took the time to share that on the show, I pray that God continues to bless all your ventures and that you as a woman empowered, you remember that self-identity as well in every stance that you take, that when our ancestors perished in them ships and in these Americas, for us to have the opportunity to do it, they didn't just want us to have the opportunity to do it, but to remember them and to build on top of the ashes. So if you build your family and your household and you build them longevity and can help others in the process, then we all are building back on the bones of those who died for us. And as a sister, I just want to say that from a brother that God bless you and I appreciate you for coming on our show.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for your prayers. I definitely need them. And thank you. I am humbled and honored to be able to share the information that God has given me to be able to share with everyone. And so, again, thank you guys for opening up your platform to me. I would love to come back anytime you would have me. And I definitely look forward to us working together, partnering together, and so we can build these communities.
Yes, amen.
Thank you so much. I just want to thank everybody so much. I want everybody to stay for this last song that we're going to play from the man himself, Pastor Hezekiah Walker, and he said it's got to get better because God is in control. Everybody take a listen.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been?
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your soul, it will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause
God is in
control, y'all. Hey. Thank you, Lord. Hey.
Find the praise
within your heart.
better.